The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and today we have a major business rock star. We've got Richard Walpert. He is the co-founder and CEO of Hello Tech, also a venture partner at both Amplify LA and Excel. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So where to begin? You have quite the entrepreneurial journey. Let's start with where you are today. Tell us about Hello Tech and then your venture partnership at the two businesses.
Yeah, so I'm kind of known as a person who has too many jobs. And you mentioned a couple right out of the gate, right? So I'm a venture partner at Excel and Amplify LA. I was one of the co-founders of Amplify LA. Amplify LA is a local accelerator focused on helping very early LA companies get off the ground. And I have two great co-founders there that are, you know, operationally running things. Hello Tech is a company we, interestingly enough, incubated at Amplify about 3 years ago. And the vision behind Hello Tech was, I kept getting asked, as did my co-founders, hey, can you help me with my Wi-Fi, my printer, my whatever? And we just found that anybody in the tech industry is asked by their neighbors, their friends, their parents, can they help them with their tech support? And that just gave us the idea that, hey, there's something here because people have this need and they're asking their friends and family or neighbors, and is there a business in this? And obviously Geek Squad exists, which is owned by Best Buy. But there was a seemingly lack of satisfaction with Geek Squad in terms of how much it costs and how long it takes to get them to come to your house. So we started Hello Tech about 2.5-3 years ago with the vision of becoming the best in-home, on-demand, meaning like Uber, tech support company in the country. And our model works just like Uber. We have 7,500 technicians that are all on our platform, that are all independent contractors, and they take jobs as they come in, as many as they want or as few as they want. So we market and we partner with other companies to provide our services to customers, and then we offer those jobs to the 7,500 technicians as they come in. So people say it's sort of the love child between Uber and Geek Squad.
I love it. Yeah, I can definitely think of a few people, my mom, who could benefit from something like that. Because a lot of times, as you said, you call up the neighbor, you call up the family member, whoever's tech savvy to get that help. Genius idea. Now, a lot of people, our entrepreneurs watching and listening probably have this idea of being the next Uber in their respective field or in this category. It's one thing to have the idea. It's another thing to execute and make it a reality.
Absolutely.
Do you have any advice on what are those first steps to actually make it a reality?
So I have a few. I mean, one, and this is a little bit maybe biased because I'm part of Amplify LA, but the proliferation of accelerators that have happened in the last 5 to 10 years that will invest in your idea when it's really just you and maybe a partner or two and a PowerPoint. And they'll put in $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 and help you get started. And more important even than the money is the office space and the mentorship and the introduction to other investors. I would say the accelerator route is the way to go for a young entrepreneur because you just get the best advice, assistance, mentorship, and really a education, you know, almost a quick entrepreneur MBA, if you will, being right. Part of one of these programs on how to take that idea and get it to the next level.
Now, for someone who doesn't know what an accelerator is, it could sound a little intimidating. So Let's break it down for a second. How does it work and how do you become a part of an accelerator?
Yeah, so accelerators, and one of the questions I often get asked is what's the difference between an incubator and an accelerator, because those terms get used sometimes interchangeably. An incubator is typically more a group of people who are building companies based on their own ideas. So they're not investing in other companies. They're not bringing other companies in. An incubator would be building their own ideas. An accelerator is much more like I talked about. An accelerator will invest in a startup that's just getting off the ground, that has raised either $25,000 or $50,000 from family or no money and help them. In terms of how to get involved in an accelerator, much like a traditional venture capital company, there's an application online at amplify.la and people can fill out that application and it gives them the ability to talk about what they're doing and upload a PowerPoint presentation if they have one. And then we have a whole process we go through where we review those, and a lot of those are not interesting for what we think is current, but many are, and then we'll start having meetings with those people, and then those meetings can turn into more meaningful meetings, and then that turns into a negotiation about how much we're going to invest and how much ownership we'll get and how long they can come into the program for and get the benefit of free office space and mentorship and investors coming into the building every day. So it's really not that hard to get introduced to accelerators. And one of the things I tell young entrepreneurs is the job of an accelerator or a VC firm, their job is actually to find you and invest. So don't feel like you're like being rude or pushy if you're pushing yourself to get in their attention span. It's actually their job to find you as well and find the best matches. So don't be shy. It works well to not just apply, but send an email to the founders.
Follow up is crucial.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd love to know what you're looking for. You touched on the fact that you're looking for an interesting business that's on trend. I'm sure scalability is a factor, but I'll let you speak on it. What are you looking for?
Yeah, that question could be broken into a couple different categories. So what could you be looking for in terms of what the team is? Or what could you be looking for in terms of like the category? You know, with teams, we like to look for well-rounded teams. So what that means is if we have a team come in that's three computer science graduates from UCLA, USC, whatever, and no business person and no sort of soft skills HR person, then we are a little bit, you know, wary because we like to see a well-rounded team.
Similarly, give us an example of what you mean by well-rounded.
So a well-rounded team would have one or two technologists that are actually writing code and maybe an MBA who understands finance, who's helping them generally run the business, and an operations person as well who's just helping with the operations.
Who has some kind of experience to back up
exactly
that zone of genius.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, and what else do you look for?
So that's in terms of team. The other thing we look for is like what's hot now. But you got to be careful that you don't get caught up too much in the what's hot now before it's really hot now. Like, I have a personal opinion that investments and hype in virtual reality in the last year or two precedes where we're really at with virtual reality, which is to say, I don't think virtual reality is going to become a mainstay of consumers yet. And a lot of companies in the last couple years have invested in virtual reality companies thinking virtual reality was going to happen now. And I think one of the reasons people thought that is because this company down in Orange County called Oculus, with this amazing, interesting headset, was bought by Facebook for $2 billion. And that made everybody think, wow, virtual reality is going to happen. But the reality is the Oculus headset came out several months ago. It's not selling all that well. It requires a very high-end computer. There's very little content available for virtual reality right now. So I'm going out on a limb a little bit here and saying this because it's counter to what most people are saying. But I think it's premature to invest in virtual reality. But we look at companies that we do think are timely now. We invested in this company about 4 years ago called The Books, standing for bouquets. And it was a very interesting model. The gentleman, John Tapp, is the CEO, partnered with a guy who literally owns a flower farm in Ecuador that's on a volcano. And he figured out a way to cost effectively overnight using a FedEx partnership, ship flowers from this Ecuador volcano to the U.S.
Oh, wow.
And launched the business with a, we will do literally cut on demand. Like, you pick the flowers you want, they get cut that day in Ecuador. They're overnighted to you, and their shelf life or table life, if you will, on your dining room table is closer to 2 weeks than it is 3 or 4 days It took out all of the steps of what happens with flowers and going through the flower market and all that sort of stuff. And that company's gone on to raise close to $40 million in venture capital since we put the first $200,000 in 4 years ago.
What a great success story.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, so much more to talk about. Thanks so much for being here. Sit tight. Richard Walport will be right back with him. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars. What you need to know before quitting your day job to follow your dreams. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. Before you say goodbye to your current job, here are some things you need to know. Number one, discover your purpose. Finding out what you want in a job can help you stay focused in your new career and avoid coming across similar situations that made you dislike your previous job. New job, same problems. You want to avoid this. Number two, how you quit your job matters. Most likely, your current boss will still have a role to play in your future employment opportunities. Employers now prefer to get on the phone with your references. Last and most importantly, you still need to be professional until you hand in your resignation letter. The way you perform at your current job will determine how your current boss will speak about you to their colleagues. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, WOW, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. HomeAdvisor can help get you started. HomeAdvisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. HomeAdvisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars, and I am joined by Richard Walpert today. He is the co-founder and CEO of Hello Tech, also a venture partner at Amplify LA and Excel. So we were talking about the hand you have in many different businesses, but you started, really, it can be traced back to when you were a kid. So if you could just give us an overview of your entrepreneurial journey.
Sure. Yeah, as a kid, I did things like garage sales, and I had a paper route. I would do a lot of raffle ticket sales for fundraisers. And my family tells me that they just knew early on that I was going to do something entrepreneurial. When I graduated college, I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know what to do. And I got this job offer to work for Apple. And this was in 1984, the year that the very first Macintosh shipped, which was an amazing machine for that point in history. So I moved to Cupertino. From LA and worked at Apple on a Mac software team for 3 years. But the whole time I had this yearning desire to just start a company. And I took the 3 years there just to learn what it was like to work at a big company and better understand how to develop software for the Macintosh. And I left there after 3 years and moved back down to Los Angeles. Part of that also was Cupertino, which is where Apple's headquarters is, mm-hmm. in 1985 and 86. Was not a very fun place.
Especially not the hopping place.
especially if you grew up in LA.
I mean, yeah.
If you were coming from Portland, it might have been okay, but coming from LA, it was a bit tough. But I moved back down to my very first startup. It was called After Hour Software. I didn't know how to raise money. I was unsophisticated at the time in the ways of venture capital. So we did consulting to Apple, to American Airlines, to NBC, to the Los Angeles Rams, back when they were the original Los Angeles Rams, building custom software for the Macintosh, and then use that revenue to actually build consumer software for the Macintosh, and built that company for 8 years, and sort of the early entrepreneur's dream. I started that company at, I think, 25, and sold it at 31 to Adobe for a very nice sum of money after doing it for about 7-8 years.
Amazing.
And got the bug. Now, I was obligated, as most entrepreneurs are, to stay on for 12 months post-selling the company, mm-hmm. to help integrate the company into the buying company. But I had no intention, nor did Adobe. They understood, and it was fine to stay longer than 12 months because I wanted to go on and do the next thing. And the next thing for me actually happened to not be a startup. I was recruited by Disney to help start and run Disney Online. Which was a great way to just learn and get about a big company. Because Apple, when I was there, again, in perspective, 1985, so we're talking 30 years ago, which makes me old, basically, was about 1,500 people. And then I got this job at Disney, which is a 100,000 person company. And I was president of Disney Online. Funny story. So somebody came to meet with me from corporate, like my second day on the job. And I had only done a startup and worked at Apple. And they told me that my budget to decorate my office at Disney, because I was a president, was $15,000.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought this was just nuts, because I had started a business with no money and was always so frugal. And here's a interior designer telling me that my budget to decorate my office was
$15,000. Wow, must be nice.
It was odd. It was different for me.
Oh yeah, that's quite the change. So it's interesting because you did have that experience working for, I mean, now obviously Apple's huge and Disney, which was already huge when you worked for it. And there's a common question entrepreneurs have, and that's, do I go straight into entrepreneurship, or is it valuable and sometimes even necessary to work for other companies first and learn from them? What is your opinion?
I think it's a great question. I think to work for another company and learn at least for 2, 3, 4 years can really, really make a difference in helping you be successful. There's a similar thing that happens with business schools, right? So like if you look at UCLA Business School or Stanford or Harvard, they will almost take nobody out of undergraduate. Mm-hmm. They want you to go work at a business for 2 or 3 years and then apply. And I think that same model to your question, which was a great one, applies to entrepreneurship. If you go and you get the experience of being part of a startup and you get to see what it's like from the inside, it just educates you on what to do, and then you can take that step.
Yeah, not only does it educate you on how to run your business because you learn from successful people, also I think that's where a lot of the ideas are generated, because you see where the holes are in your industry. And I've interviewed so many entrepreneurs that's how they came up with their $1 billion idea.
Yes.
So, okay, after Disney, then you went back into entrepreneurship.
Back into entrepreneurship, did 2 startups after that. One was called Checkout.com, which was the e-commerce site selling CDs, DVDs, and video games. We sold that company to Warehouse Music, which was a retail national chain at the time. Back when people would go to a store to buy CDs and DVDs, they had about 500 stores in the U.S. Did the one-year thing again, like I did with Adobe. And then I did an internet radio startup called Audio Mill and sold that to Real Networks, the pioneers of video and audio streaming on the internet. And that one was different because that when they acquired my company, the CEO and founder of Real Networks, who acquired us, said, look, Richard, I'm buying you as much as I'm buying the company. So you have to stay for a minimum of 3 years. You can't just stay for a year.
Interesting.
And on that deal, I actually ended up staying about 5. So
voluntarily.
It
was there a reason why you stayed longer than you had to?
It was fast growing and interesting and fun. So it was the years of that were like 2001, 2006. And Real was still the pioneer of streaming audio and video. And I had a lot of autonomy and respect from Rob, the CEO. Like I, in 2003, said, you know what? I think streaming music is the future. I think CDs are going to die. I think the buying a song at a time is going to go away. And we found this company called Rhapsody. And we bought, and Rob let me lead the acquisition of that company. Rhapsody is actually today known as Napster. A long sort of circular history, right? Because we all know that Napster was this illegal file sharing thing back in 2000.
Right.
It got shut down by the music labels, but the rights of it were bought by a company that ultimately sold to Real Networks as well. So, but it was a great run. For 5 years, I ran a $200 million P&L, meaning our revenue of my division was about $200 million. And I had worldwide responsibility, so I could travel all over the world and make sure that things were going well. But after 5 years, it was like enough. So I wanted to do something else.
So lastly, you'll actually partner with other businesses and be their in-house tech support through Hello Tech. So
exactly. Tell
me how that works.
So what Hello Tech offers is basically like I talked about earlier, Uber for in-home tech support or installation or training. So one of our huge partners is Samsung, and we are the in-home setup, demo, company for the new Galaxy S8. So that's a huge partnership for us. We have another one with a video doorbell company called Ring, which has a really cool product. It's a video doorbell. It videotapes anything that happens at your front door. We've partnered with a company called Altice, which has about 5 million broadband customers who need TV mountings, printer setups, smart home installations, smart lock installations. So our business is actually at Hello Tech half direct-to-consumer, where we market our services, but the growing part is through these partnerships like Samsung and Ring and others.
So cool.
It's a great partnership for us and for them.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time and all of your insight. Very interesting chat.
Okay, great.
We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Chad Billmeyer is joining us. He's the CEO of Panjo. Chad, it's a pleasure to have you, brother.
Great to be here, Mark. Thanks.
All right, so recap for us. What's Panjo?
Yeah, so Panjo is a community-based marketplace. We're really focused on making sure we have unique inventory for passion-based communities. So an example, folks who are really into BMWs or folks who are really into camping. There are parts and accessories associated with those hobbies, and we're really focused on making sure that the enthusiasts in those communities have a place that's enjoyable, informative, and efficient.
Well, I got to point something out. When you came into the studio, you had this giant panda head on. So tell us, why is that? I know Panjo and Panda, so that was kind of your thing?
Yeah, well, so I think, thinking about tips for entrepreneurs, thinking about your branding is really important. Panjo is actually our third name. We were first Dealbird, then Enthusify, and then Panjo.
I like Panjo the most.
This is it, right?
Especially when you come in with a giant panda hat on.
it took a member of ours in Europe to say, hey, we don't have the th sound here, and we can't pronounce your name, right? So you have to think about these things. So really, there's unfortunately not a more sexy story about Panjo other than it was the result of an exhaustive search for short, affordable, pronounceable, non-internationally offensive names. Yeah. And then it's about, okay, how do we make that name stick? And so the panda is a visual aid to help you remember Panjo.
I love that. And so what has been the hardest part? I know you have a background in sales, as do I, so I definitely want to talk about that. But what's been the hardest part so far getting your business off the ground? Was it raising the money? You guys did raise money, right?
Yeah, we did raise money. I think, so as a marketplace business, what's interesting, marketplaces are in the business of reducing transaction costs. This is a really academic view of a marketplace, right? So if you say, do we sell BMW parts? Well, yes, but what we really sell is a reduction in transaction cost. It should be easier and cost less for the buyer and the seller to get a transaction done, to find one another, to trust one another, to pay one another. Mm. And so as a marketplace, you not only have to grow supply, but you have to grow demand in equilibrium, right? Those things have to happen in concert with one another. And so that's this added challenge of having a marketplace business that you have a supply and demand side that you have to grow in parallel.
Are you guys using social media? I feel like something like your social media would be a key feature to be using. How are you capitalizing on it?
Yeah, for sure. So for us, it's been interesting because we're about 5 years old, and I think we've seen Facebook evolve, Twitter evolve.
A lot. Yeah.
Right, a
Facebook
lot
went
in
from
being
a social platform to being an advertising platform, even though most people wouldn't consider it, but they do billions of dollars in ad revenue.
Yeah, and so the interesting thing to see now is what will happen for Facebook as far as a solution for transactions, for commerce, for classifieds, for marketplaces. I think in foreign countries outside the U.S., it's a lot more common to see folks do transactions over a Facebook group. Within the U.S., we're seeing some growth there. And so we think about how we're partnered with groups that are forming and gelling on Facebook and how we make their transactions more efficient.
Okay. What do you see people making mistakes when it comes to using social media? Because there's a lot.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So it's really trust. Though, in theory, your identity on Facebook is your true identity, in reality, that's not the case for fraudsters. So we see a lot of folks who are really passionate about camping gear, whatever, getting ripped off through fraud that's now occurring in Facebook.
Okay, so that's one of the biggest mistakes. Is there anything else?
Mistake-wise, right? So
transparency and authenticity is a huge thing. You know, nowadays a lot of people are just trying to put on this front. And at the end of the day, the more transparent and authentic, whether it be your brand, whether it be your personal brand, I saw a company, one of my business partners actually bought a company, a product from a company. And the reason why he said he bought it was because they were so transparent and authentic and showing you the breakdown of here's how much each individual part of the manual labor cost, the product cost. And so it was like, this bag cost us, X amount of money to make. We're selling it to you for Y, but it could be sold for Z on a standard retail.
Now, this makes me think about our core culture at Panjo of openness and honesty. Every associate knows at Panjo how much cash is in the bank, how many transactions occurred yesterday, what meetings I'm in. Everybody knows what's going on, so there's no sense of like any surprise or wool being pulled over anyone's eyes. You know what's going on in the organization and the health of the organization, no matter what your role is at Panjo.
So what else for culture? Because I love what you just said. I think that's an incredible value set to build the company off of. But what else are you guys doing for company culture?
Yeah, I think education is an important
investing
part of our
back
culture.
In the employees.
Yeah, and so the way that manifests itself, hack days are kind of common in tech companies. And for us, a hack day wasn't that fruitful because it kind of left out a number of associates. So we developed Education Day, where you take a day to advance your career path in whatever way makes sense for the role you're in. If that means watching a documentary, fine. Like, that's what you did on Education Day. And then we come together as a team and present for 60 seconds apiece what we did and what we learned on Education Day.
Mm. And how did you come up with that idea? Because I think Education Day is genius. A lot of companies should be investing in their employees.
I think it was me being selfish. I think I had a backlog. I had a backlog of academic papers about marketplaces that I really wanted, that I just was not getting to. And we had this issue with our hack days not being as fruitful as we wanted. And I had this personal problem I was solving for myself. So yeah, that's the origin story.
Well, I really enjoy that because I myself have gone from being a person who hates reading to loving it. Mm. And we have a similar thing that we do in my business. CEO of Panjo, Chad Billmeyer, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Reading is one of the best things. Do you have any books to recommend for people?
Oh, man. So I love Colin's books. So Good to Great, Built to Last. Patrick Lencioni has an amazing series. Death by Meeting is part of that series. Those are some of my favorites.
What about any Tony Robbins or John Assaroff, any of those people?
I do not consume those books, no.
Okay. What is your favorite type of genre and when it comes to business development, entrepreneur development, spiritual development, personal development?
Yeah. So I really tend to gravitate toward like business biographies, the story of the railroads or Rockefeller. There's lots of lessons to be learned in the history of business and how somebody really hit an inflection point, right? Inflection points, yes, there's an element of like luck and serendipity, but they happen for a reason because someone was pushing really hard. They're pushing a boulder up a hill, right?
So what happened? Give us an inflection point in your business or in your life.
Yeah, so Panjo, we were powering marketplaces for enthusiast communities. And communities have already come together in a variety of places. BeamerForums.com is a place where BMW enthusiasts hang out. And so for us, having this realization that it was really important to partner with these existing, say, 10-year-old communities and really solve the issues that the community organizers and the buyers and sellers were having, and to really think about what a partnership, a meaningful partnership, would look like and what kind of problems we could solve and value we could provide for all the people involved. Like, that was a key inflection point for Panjo's growth.
I love that, because inflection points are going to accelerate the velocity of the success of your business. That was one for you there. Yeah. We did touch on some best practices earlier, whether it was company culture or some selling, different things like that, raising money. That's maybe not a best practice, but it can be. If you need the money, it could be a very important practice. What are some other best practices for your business?
Yeah, I think thinking about sales early, right? So it's super common for me to meet with a first-time entrepreneur or an entrepreneur earlier in their venture. And there's some kind of underappreciation for sales and marketing. Right? Yeah. So it's like, well, I have to build this app and the app's not done yet. Well, you don't need to build an app. Like, you need customers before you build the app. So just kind of this recognition.
Pre-order is something that I think is like a lost... I don't know what.
Lost art, right?
Lost art. Like, people, like, they don't understand. It's like, you could be taking pre-orders. If people want it, tell them you give them 50% off what it would have been. You go on, you watch Shark Tank, and people are like, you didn't do any pre-orders? You didn't do any crowdfunder or Kickstarter or Indiegogo? You guys didn't do anything? And it's I think, no, I needed the product to be done.
Exactly. There's that sentiment there. No, so you can put up a quick landing page, use a tool like Unbounce or something. Yeah. Throw up a quick landing page. Spend a couple $100 on Facebook or Google. Drive some traffic there. Mm-hmm. Can you get somebody to leave their email address, right? Can you present? Yeah, can you present your idea in an informative and interesting and compelling enough way that you can convert people and you don't into prospective customers?
I love what you just said, because you also made a distinction, which is you don't even have to get people to give you their money. You could just get a list of 100,000 people that all raised their hand, meaning they all gave you their email, their contact information, saying, when this comes out, I want to be on the early bird list. So now you've got 100,000 people or whatever, right?
Yeah, and look, I don't want to argue for being deceptive, but you could take it a level further and go to stand up something quickly on a Shopify, you know, saying
with a rendering of an image and say
precisely
50% off.
You can take cash for that, and then you can follow up with a call to that individual and say, I'm super sorry, we're not available in your area yet, or we're waiting until we get 100 orders before we manufacture this. If you want me to refund your funds, I'll do that now. Again, you know, there's
back to the transparency and authenticity is where you literally tell people, look, straight up, like, here's what we're doing. We need you to help fund this, or we need you to raise your hand and give us your information. We won't send you anything but updates, blah, blah, blah. You just go step by step and be so straight up, because nowadays we live in like the information overload era. Everybody thinks they're an expert and a coach and a guru nowadays, which I hate because I'm in the industry and I see it all the time. And so it gives the industry a bad name. But people are so like, they're so used to advertisements and scams. And the problem is that when there's something really good out there, if it's not transparent, if it's not marketed properly, they're not going to make the sales that they're capable of, because nowadays, and I think it's kind of always been this way, but especially nowadays, the bar is really high.
Yeah.
And the barrier to entry to get into business is lower than it's ever been.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, great products don't make money necessarily, great marketing does. And so, you've got to be able to market your product properly. And this is one of the ways to do it, even if you don't even have the product.
Yes.
Which is even better.
Right. Really confirm that you have product market fit, that the market exists for the product you have, and you know how to talk to that market,
and if you've got the people telling you, either with their money or with their personal information, contact information, that, hey, I want you to contact me, or hey, here's my money, I want to be on the early bird list, that's showing you that there's already demand, and then you go and build the product. Biggest mistake most people make is they try to sell a product when they already spend all their time, energy, and money building the product, but they don't know how to market or sell it.
Yeah.
And you should sell and market before you even build the product in some cases. Not all cases. There's no context here. We're just saying that is an option.
And the number of times you see an app that took $100,000 to develop, a website that took $100,000 to develop, and no customers for
that
thing.
Which is so stupid. Yeah. You can build the most amazing website for $5,000, maybe $10,000, if it's crazy. Chad Bilmeyer, a pleasure having you on the show, brother.
Good to see you, Mark.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
An entrepreneur has so little time to convince anyone they are the real deal. Here are some ways to help you pitch your business. I'm Alex Worley with a Business Rockstars Minute. Number one, be prepared. The way you conduct yourself when the tough questions come flying from all directions can determine the outcome of your pitch, for better or worse. Number two, get to the point. With adult attention spans maxing out anywhere from 8 seconds to 20 minutes, presentations that fail to capture interest immediately and sustain it through the critical parts have a slim chance of winning. Number three, be real. We've all learned lessons, turned around a bad situation, and found inspiration in other success. The powerful messages we learned from these stories are what make a business pitch real and the pitcher trustworthy to an audience. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor.
Hi, I'm Mike Ditka. On the field, they called me Iron Mike. But some days, even Iron Mike can feel a little rusty. So I turned to Blue Emu. Blue Emu's non-greasy, deep-penetrating formula gets down deep for big-time comfort. And more importantly, it doesn't leave me smelling like a locker room. Now, if you excuse me, I have some yelling to do. You hit like old men! Blue Emu. It works fast, and you won't stink.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. U.S. entrepreneurs continue to project a strong business outlook despite a slight dip in economic confidence. According to the Spring 2019 Bank of America Small Business Owner Report, nearly 70% plan to expand and more than half predict rising revenues. Even as growth remains a focus, entrepreneurs are taking steps to protect against potential threats to their business. Nearly two-thirds have a business continuity plan in the event of a natural disaster, while the majority have taken steps to prepare for an economic downturn and secure data against a cyber breach. Sharon Miller, head of Small Business, Bank of America.
Small business owners remain optimistic about their business outlook and their ability to grow in the year ahead. However, while most entrepreneurs are taking steps to protect their business from potential threats such as natural disasters, an economic downturn, or a cyber breach, a sizable number still are not.
For more, visit newsroom.bankofamerica.com.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. This is our CEO Roundtable segment, and joining me right now is two rockstar CEOs. Tell us, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Audrey Bellis. I'm the founder of Startup DTLA and Worthy Women.
I'm Fabian Geierhalter. I run a brand consultancy called Finian, and we work with entrepreneurs to make sure they don't screw up branding.
All right, guys, so the trend nowadays, at least from my perspective, is entrepreneurship. People are just trying to call themselves entrepreneurs, even if they're probably not really an entrepreneur. So I'm curious, how do you feel about the word entrepreneurship?
I'm uncomfortable with it, quite frankly. To this day, I don't
enjoy
it. You
don't even call yourself an entrepreneur, do you?
I don't call myself an entrepreneur. I tell people I'm a small business owner. I'm just a person trying to get things done, pay bills, and do what we set out to do in the world.
You're just taking care of business. That's all Audrey does.
Yeah.
In the end, that's what it's all about. Yeah, no, absolutely. The only thing is I work with entrepreneurs, so I like when some of them call themselves entrepreneurs because they actually are. They're innovative. They're pushing things. And I agree that maybe you and I are more like, well, we started organically a business and now we're running it. So maybe us being entrepreneurs is, you know, I don't know, overcompensating, I don't know, overachieving.
I love the word personally, like to associate with it and what it means. But at the same time, I don't like the word when people are just throwing it around loosely, like, I'm an entrepreneur. It's like, you started your business this week. Like, you're not an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You know, you just started.
Then you're a real disruptor.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
And I don't really even know what I think like entrepreneur means. Like, what is it, 3 years in business? Is it after you've made a certain amount of money?
Right.
It's hard. What do you guys think? What do you think it takes to be an entrepreneur? What do you think like these criteria make you define yourself as an entrepreneur?
I think of grit. I want to know that you failed a few times, that you're putting yourself out there, you're risking it, you're doing the best that you can no matter what. And every time that you fall, you're going to keep getting up because you believe in what that looks like on the other side.
I think a lot of it has to do with being hungry. And being hungry means that you're willing to put in the work to get the results, to get paid later. Mm-hmm. You're not an entrepreneur if you've only ever had a job where you get paid to show up. Like if you get paid without producing results, meaning you go in and you're going to get the same paycheck no matter what, you're not getting paid on results. You're getting paid on your time. That's not an entrepreneur. That's a job.
Yeah.
I think entrepreneurs truly are people like, I mean, I think almost salespeople as a whole, depending on what they're doing, those are entrepreneurs. If they're not getting a base pay and they're only getting paid on commission, that's the closest job to being an entrepreneur. You don't get paid anything unless you go out and produce a result first. What do you guys think?
I still get paid on commission only. That's how I pay myself.
That's my point right there. So, I mean, even though you don't like to call yourself an entrepreneur, I'm going to call you one, all right?
I appreciate
that. You're an
entrepreneur
in my book, Audrey.
Thank you. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you touched on something really interesting. You talked about the willingness to not be paid first. I was recently on a panel with VCs talking about how to go for funding. And I personally have never fundraised before. I've bootstrapped all of my businesses. But one of the investors said, when entrepreneurs come to me, if they have not sacrificed and starved and ate ramen and put everything down that they had, and they're just coming to me for the, you know, for that paycheck from the beginning, I don't want to invest in somebody who didn't believe in their own vision enough to starve a little bit for it. Have you ever raised money?
I have not raised money, no. But I love seeing my clients raise money. Mm. And how selfless I am.
But I think you made a good point there, right? You've got to be willing to trade your life for whatever it is that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And that's a huge differentiator between entrepreneurs and a true entrepreneur, is they put everything they had into becoming truly successful at whatever their passion or their business is. And I think that's one of the keys. But all of us now are entrepreneurs. And so let's talk about best practices. What are some of the things that help you stay focused, be productive, be organized, and ultimately thrive in business? It's a loaded question, but pick it wherever you want. What helps you thrive in business as an entrepreneur and as a CEO?
For me, it's my rituals. I have a routine and I stick to it because I know it works for me. Setting up my day properly. I also know that my best hours are in the morning, so I don't take any serious meetings after lunch. I only take serious strategic negotiating meetings in the mornings.
And that's just for you as a person. Like you figured out when you perform best, think, feel, and behave the best.
Yep.
And as a result, you've adapted your schedule around that. I like that.
Absolutely.
Fabian?
For me, it's all about the clients. I really think that if you have the right people that you surround yourself with, and not just your staff, and you know, everyone talks about culture internally, but the people that I interact with are going to make or break my day. So I want to have a great day, an inspiring day working with great people. And a lot of that is, you know, attracting and weeding out the right clients. So I focus a lot on that.
I love that. And for me personally, there's so many different things that I do. But to share one that's truly changed not only the quality of my life, but the trajectory of my success in business has been how I condition myself with education. And so a lot of people just get their education from their experiences. It stops after college or school or whatever, and then it's just from their experiences. Well, I've been in business 10 years. Cool, but have you studied someone who's been in business for 40 years?
Right.
And so for me, I'm always trying to get the upper edge. I'm always trying to shorten my learning curve. It's like the old saying, right? A smart person learns from their own experiences, where a genius learns from other people's experiences, or a wise man learns from other people's experiences. And so for me, I'm always trying to learn from other people's experiences by reading their books, attending their events, investing in consultants, and things like that. This is our CEO Roundtable segment. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, and joining me are two amazing guests. Reintroduce yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
I'm Audrey Bellis. I'm the founder of Startup DTLA and Worthy Women.
I'm Fabian Geierhalter. I'm the founder of Finian, and we work with startups to launch their startups as brands.
As we come to a wrap, guys, I just want to know from your perspective, I think personally, if you're the only person in your business and you don't have the money to outsource and hire somebody else, I think you have to be the best salesperson in your company because you're the only person in your company. And whether it's getting partners, getting purchase orders or whatever, you're going to have to sell something. You're going to have to influence somebody. So I don't know, I'm just curious from your perspective. Do you think you have to be a good salesperson if you're the only person in your company?
Yes, and I happen to be the person who is 100% responsible for all of our business development in my company, despite having a team of 5 people. Because again, if my business is an extension of my personality and people are buying Audrey every single day, I better be the face of that all the time.
For sure. Fabian?
You have to.
Close it up for us, brother.
You have to. It's about survival, people, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it is.
You two have been amazing. I appreciate you for coming on the show. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.